You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at our P.O. Box, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 25th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside favorite GOP watering hole, Butthurt McGee's, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Yeah, me too. And now, recorded live from just outside the downstairs bathroom at Davos.
Apparently you need a white name tag.
To use the upstairs bathroom in Davos. Yeah. Davos Abbey. There's the lords and ladies of the house, and then there's all the help that scuttles around and does their bidding and so forth. And for those of you who don't know, Davos is the annual meeting of our global oligarch overlords in Switzerland. And they sit around on a mountaintop for a week and plan our destiny and complain that we don't behave the way their vision of human nature tells us to behave. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much it?
And then they sing Ricola.
Yeah.
From the Alpine Meadow.
It's a thing. It's a total thing that the billionaires and their people who want to be billionaires and acolytes and hedge fund managers and titans of various industries show up at this very, very, very exclusive club every year to plan our destiny and complain about a variety of things that they or be very enthusiastic about a variety of things. One of my favorite obscure writers is named Richard Sennett, who's actually a Chicago guy who was a sociologist and written a lot of books. And I probably read this before. I probably read it last year at our...
I think you did.
Our mention of Davos.
Yeah.
But he wrote this lovely paragraph about when he was doing reporting on this called The Dizzy Life of Davos Man. And mind you, keep in mind, this is these are the circles in which people like Tom Friedman and David Brooks move, but also the circles in which they believe has all the answers. If the human race would just listen to these noble capitalist creatures up on top of their high mountain, then everything would be fine. Everything would just work itself out somehow okay. And what Sennett noted was that he had an epiphany of sorts at Davos, listening to the rulers of the flexible realm. We, quote unquote, is also a dangerous pronoun to them. They dwell comfortably in entrepreneurial disorder, but fear organized confrontation. They, of course, fear the resurgence of unions, but become acutely and personally uncomfortable, fidgeting or breaking eye contact or retreating into taking notes if forced to discuss people who, in their jargon, are, quote, left behind. They know that the great majority of those who toil in the flexible regime are left behind, and of course they regret it. But the flexibility they celebrate, and flexibility means no rules, no government, no regulation, just pretty much free form.
Well, and no unions. We bargain for the lowest possible cost for labor. Labor is fungible. Yeah.
And it is a pure capitalist oligarchy, mm-hmm. and these are the ippy tippy top dwellers of that. So. They know that the great majority of those who toil in the flexible regime are left behind. Of course, they regret it. But the flexibility they celebrate does not give, it cannot give, any guidance for the conduct of an ordinary life. The new masters have rejected careers in the old English sense of the word as pathways along which people can travel. Durable, sustained paths of action are foreign territories. The idea that you should have a life where you could have a life, or that it is desirable to have a life where in your 20s or 30s, you can sit down by yourself or with your spouse and plan a life together, that you will have a career or two or three careers, that during the course of that time, you will save for retirement, you will buy a house, you will put your children through college, and these things will happen at fixed points along the way, not a rigid mule in the traces kind of life. But a life where you can sort of guess what next year and the year after that will probably be like, sit down with a calculator and figure out this is how much we'll pay in taxes, this is how much our mortgage will be, this is how much college will cost, here's what we have to put aside for retirement, and figure out how to move through your life with a way that's in a way that's predictable enough so that you can have some measure of security and peace and happiness. that whole vision of how life can be lived is to them horrifying. Life should be risk. You should risk it all at the casino of life. You should be able to take gigantic, destructive, crazy risks. And if you don't live in that world, then you're hedging. Then you're not really living. That's the world that I describe is the, to them, stultifying, union-clogged horror show. It's just this gray, bland existence. And so they've invented this casino economy where you just risk $1 billion. And you try and you fail and you try and you fail and screw it. Who cares? What they never factor into is the fact that their membership in the Davos Club gives them the security to create, to do crazy things. If Arianna Huffington risks $100 million and fucks up, so what? Her friends will prop her right back up again, put her right back in business again, and she can go right on her merry way. If she screws up and needs to write a book to raise a couple of million in fast cash, she has 20 friends in the publishing industry who will publish her book. They have these thick, rich networks, social networks of rich, influential friends who all protect each other and all care for each other. And they cannot get into their head that ordinary people don't have access to Jamie Dimon's speed dial.
Yeah. But, you know, this is a wonderful segue into the polar opposite of that, which is the inaugural address that Barack Obama gave about we the people.
Absolutely.
And it is absolutely the polar opposite of that this is not about 20 billionaires who are going to do high risk capital development with no regard for baseline workers.
No.
This is the opposite of that, where even the president of the United States, the leader of the free world and the most powerful nation on earth, is one within the democracy. And he is as accountable to the people as anyone. So I want to talk. Let's get into that. Let's get into the inaugural address.
Sure. And let's be clear that I read one of my favorite people, David Brooks, as you know, he said that chagriningly, wrote a column praising Barack Obama's inaugural address as high rhetoric. And it was a wonderful speech, probably the best inaugural speech in 50 years, which it was. But then says, but he's disappointed that he omitted celebrating individual initiative and individual enterprise and the free market and blah, 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 which, if you read the speech, is simply not true. It is a very, very carefully balanced, constructed speech that says we do both of these things. We have individual initiative. We have enterprise. We have all the things that we want people to be.
We have suspicion of big government.
Yeah.
But we also have needs.
Yes.
For wanting to do things together. And the way that we do that is through government.
And the way
as a tool.
And you have a firewall against complete catastrophic personal failure and loss in the marketplace that frees you up to take the kind of entrepreneurial risks and try new things. That's exactly what David Brooks celebrates constantly.
Well, except that David Brooks celebrates it for the big banks. And
yes.
Barack Obama claimed to be celebrating it for Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, but he's also protecting the big banks too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. And I think we need to get into that a little bit, because my question about the speech was it a liberal speech with liberal, as some people have said, you know, this liberal laundry list that is supposed to make his base happy, or was it a speech for the ages? You know, was he speaking to history, or was it both?
Well, first of all, I have to laugh at the idea that Barack Obama's base will ever be happy.
No, I know they won't. We won't.
But what about the drones, Blue Gal?
anything.
And
I kept thinking, you know, I'm so glad that he mentioned global warming, but I am still holding in my pocket a worry stone for the XL pipeline. You know,
sure,
and I'm going to continue to do that until we know it's not going to be built.
Yes. And there is that thing that activists do, and this is why I'm very glad we have activists, and I am very pleased that they do what they do on behalf of my liberal values.
Well, and I'm proud of our activism as far as we take it too.
But the idea that you can't celebrate anything, you can't stop and cherish anything until your personal laundry list of grievances is completely resolved to your satisfaction, is ludicrous.
Glass, I think those kind of people are disproportionately represented in the comment threads of liberal blogs.
Gosh, you think so? I think they're disproportionately represented in liberal blogs.
Yeah. So, you know, I sort of take that with a grain of salt.
I'm not trying
to erase what you're saying, but.
No, but, you know, people who, and not to discount anyone's grievances, not to discount the fact that, yes, there's a laundry list of things that in a pure utopia would have been taken care of and loudly pronounced. And then we run up against the limit of what you can actually do in the real world, given the limits of what you have. I think, unless he backslides massively, and it's always possible, that President Obama has finally learned the lesson that liberals have been trying to teach him since the day he took office. Mm-hmm. And liberals have been trying to teach this country for 40 years, which is you cannot negotiate with extremists.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party is now just the party of extremists, whether it's their rapety, rape, rape, rape position on women, whether it's guns for everyone, whether it's ludicrous talk of austerity and let's balance the federal budget that we fucked up in 10 years, whatever issue you take, pick one, pick any. Their positions are nutty, and you drill into their position. You find out the reason they hold them is because they firmly believe that 47% of this country are moochers and welfare queens who are stealing their gold. They're taking my gold, Blue Gal. They're taking my gold, and we have to stop them. And they really believe that. And there's no way you're going to ever disabuse them of that notion.
No, but so you can't have a friendly exchange of ideas with people who hold that position.
No.
Yeah.
And people who think Benghazi is the worst crime since the Holocaust.
Well, we're going to get to that, too. Yeah. But I want
the point
sticking
being,
to the speech.
Yeah, the point being that you can't reason with these people, and because they have the great sorting, the great centrifuge of history has simply sorted out of their midst anybody who's reasonable. And what you have left is a pure party, a pure ideology that marches in lockstep, believes in lockstep, and is going insane in lockstep. And what this president finally seems to have figured out, at least for the short term, is, oh, you can't reason with them at all. So we're just going to proceed from a position of these people are crazy, and I'm not going to shy away from saying that anymore. I'm not going to be afraid to go on Meet the Press and say, Mr. Gregory, you're simply not true. This is not a symmetrical situation. And I think that frees up a lot of ability to have a conversation. Now, was this a liberal speech or one for the ages? I think it was absolutely both. Mm-hmm. It was a very fine speech.
I wanted to say that I think he also recognized that as he speaks to history, he recognizes, as you have said many, many times, that the liberals are right all along.
Yeah.
And so that when you're dealing with issues of social justice and he, you know, this was also a we may not get their speech and things will not be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, that was his message for the base was I'm not going to be a perfect embodiment of everything you want me to be, but I do recognize that the fight for social justice is the right fight to have.
Yes.
And by speaking to that from a historical standpoint of what are people going to be talking about 50 years from now, 150 years from now, they'll look back on this speech and say, okay, he was for all of this stuff.
Yep.
In a very specific way that we all know now to be true.
Yeah, it is.
He's willing to put himself up for that.
In that sense, it was a very safe speech.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because it was a time travel novel. It was, I've traveled 50 years
Everybody
in the future.
Everybody take a drink.
Yeah. I've traveled 50 years into the future, you know, mm-hmm. and I've seen what the world looks like. And now I'm back here and I'm telling you, we should really do the things that they believe 50 years from now are just commonly accepted normal things.
Yep.
And if you haven't seen Lincoln, go see it, if only to get a look at the Southern delegation, the people who were just frantic to keep slavery and spoke openly and clearly and on the public record about slavery is a God-given institution. We have to keep slavery. Can we come back in the Union? Will you let us back in the Union in time enough
to undo the 13th Amendment? That was the most amazing line in the whole movie to me, because it was Obamacare and it was everything that they've just this denial of the position that they are in I mean, I loved it when John Stewart this week said, you know, Pat Buchanan speaking from the wrong side of history.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's where these folks are, and the blindness to that.
Uh-huh.
That, no, we're just, you know, we want to make sure that we introduce a bill repealing Obamacare for the 34th time.
Yes. Because...
Did you hear about Orly Tates, by the way, speaking of that?
No, I don't follow her antics.
Some judge asked her, because, you know, she's always going to court to try to make Barack Obama's Social Security number into some secret Kenyan code.
Yeah.
And a judge did ask her, why do you keep doing this? Why do you keep coming before the court and filing these crazy lawsuits?
Mm-hmm.
And she compared herself to Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah. Your Honor.
I just keep fighting for this because it's so right and true. And I know in my heart that it will someday we will win.
Well, and
that to me proved that she was absolutely certifiable.
Well, I mean, she's sincere. And therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
The first of all, the actor who played Alexander Stevens in the Lincoln movie was spot on physically.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine, I mean, just let your mind go back to where they were. The war was going to be over in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, no matter what happened. They were losing. The South had been burned to the ground. They'd lost their cities. They'd lost their ports. They had hundreds of thousands had died. They were decimated. The inflation was running rampant. It was modern warfare in the sense that it had completely decimated their country. Mm-hmm. And they come to the North to parlay for surrender. And their only term was, but you have to let us keep slavery. And then you realize how completely fanatical they were. Because they're like, we don't care if you burn our country to the ground. Even in his last inaugural, Jefferson Davis, once the South had been lost, once the cities had been destroyed, spoke about, well, now that our cities are gone, we don't have to defend them anymore. That frees our army up to go and fight in better ways, in bigger ways. But it's that great distillation process that the war created, that blood and the loss and the tragedy. And at the end, it was only about slavery.
Yeah.
It was only about a bunch of Southern white assholes, who fought under the American swastika for their right to keep human beings as cattle.
And
that's what it was
about.
And
our listener D for sending us that email as a reminder that the stars and bars, first of all, that was actually the colonial flag of the United States of America, not the Confederate flag. And
yes,
we shouldn't call it the Confederate flag. We should call it American swastika.
Well, and it was a flag that after the war went into the museum and only came back out again once the South decided it didn't like civil rights. And they decided, we're going to take this flag that we know is deliberately offensive, that was used by the Klan to terrorize people, and we're going to put it in our state flag as a big fuck you to the federal government. We're not going to integrate our schools, period. But the sense that all that history remembers of these Southerners is their fanaticism. At the very end, all they remember is how completely psychotic they were, how intractably locked onto their position they were, that they didn't care if it burned the country to the ground. They didn't care if it destroyed everything, literally destroyed everything. By God, you're not going to take our slaves.
And speaking of that, Pat Buchanan, I want to bring Barack Obama's mention of Stonewall. That's just a bar brawl. What is he doing elevating that to the level of a inaugural address?
And this is, this is what losing looks like. And I don't mean losing an election. This is what fading into history looks like. That they're getting crazier and louder and more white and more bigoted and more desperate. And their tone, what they actually believe, is boiling ever closer to the surface. And as it comes clearer and clearer that they really are a party of intractable morons and snake handlers and bigots and assholes, all held together by money and propaganda and historic revisionism, the more it becomes painfully clear that liberals were right all along. This is, Lawrence O'Donnell, let me mention in passing that Lawrence O'Donnell,
once again,
bless his heart, went full Drift Glass.
Yes, he did. And I tried to submit that, by the way, full Drift Glass, to the Urban Dictionary this week. And they rejected it. I haven't had a chance to tell you that.
Thank you. Thank you for rubbing lemon juice and salt into my already. But it was again, I'm delighted. I think he probably reads a lot of people, and I'm not one of them, but I bet he reads Charlie Pierce and Matt Taibbi.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But his critique was these people, whatever party they belong to at the moment, these people, this core group of people have always been wrong about everything, going way, 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 way back. And this is just the current manifestation of and we are reaching a point where they are completely ignoring the fact that 5, 10, 15 years from now, people will look back on the Republican Party as it existed in 2012 and be horrified. Yep. That these people, granddad, how could you have let these crazy bigoted lunatics, how could you have been a Republican? Aren't you ashamed? I mean, you know, and they, again, they sort of were. After Bush left, they remember they burned their uniforms. Yeah. They pretended George Bush never happened. They scrubbed the history record. Nobody ever voted for George Bush. Nobody ever liked deficits. So they have a history of doing that. But that cycle of acting crazy and then denying it and acting crazy and then denying it is getting shorter and shorter to the point where it happens in the same sentence. And this speech by Barack Obama put that into a concrete sarcophagus, really sealed the Republican Party inside of its own self and said, okay, you crazy fuckers, go ahead and stew all you want and act as crazy as you want. But we're not going to pretend anymore that this is a game of both sides do it. This is absolutely I'm speaking not. For history. And here's history judgment is being rendered right now. And if you're smart, you can see it coming. If you're not, you will end up on the ash heap.
And we want to give a hat tip to our reader who pointed out the interview with David Plouffe that was on CNN with Candy Crowley. And Candy Crowley said, well, you know, Barack Obama voted against the debt ceiling. So, you know, that means that, you know, he's kind of a hypocrite, isn't he?
Yeah, he threw an elbow.
And his exact words were, we've got to stop this false equivalence.
Yeah.
Barack Obama never voted in a way that intentionally planned and didn't care if the world economy collapsed.
Yes. And thought that was
and these
thing.
People do. These people know that if they vote this way, the world economy will collapse and they don't care.
Well, they think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, because then we can get back to the gold standard and survival of the fittest, and then maybe someone will sleep with me. Maybe after the apocalypse I can get a girlfriend. Or let's face it, since half the GOP are closeted gay men, a boyfriend. But either way, you know, these are people who really do miss the Cold War because they miss that living on the edge of the apocalypse and having.
Yeah, you know, that's when you get laid.
Yeah.
This could be our last night on Earth, honey.
You know, and you're sitting there in the elevator looking around going, you know, if the apocalypse hits and we're all stuck in here, I bet she'd do me.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. Yeah, I did. I just wanted to say at the end that if Stonewall was just a bar brawl, then Selma was just a bunch of pedestrians blocking a bridge. So
yeah. Well, and now Pat Buchanan still believes Watergate was a third-rate burglary.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Richard Nixon was done in by a bunch of liberals in the press.
Yeah.
And he will believe that till the day he dies.
Absolutely.
But here's the thing, and sort of this is my Davos analogy. The fact that the Republican Party and the conservative movement generally is insane and believes lots and lots of crazy things is more and more becoming a fact. It's just people don't debate it anymore because the debates are so fruitless. You can turn on Fox News any time of the day or night and see crazy people, lying, hypocritical people saying crazy, lying, hypocritical things. So the fact that they're nuts is sort of tacit. This is like the end of Iraq almost in a certain way, in that, yeah, okay, it's not working out the way we thought. And yeah, okay, this was probably a terrible idea. But no one's going to say that. We're just going to gently ease away from the topic and accept the fact without acknowledging who was right or who was wrong.
That's exactly how the Republican House is dealing with the debt ceiling, too.
Yeah. Yeah. But the problem is, if, like Davos, you have a condo built on top of that mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like Meet the Press or Face the Nation or the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the Washington Post. And that condo entirely depends on both sides being wrong all the time. And you built that condo on a live volcano. You have a real problem on your hands because you can't walk back the shit that you're publishing or half your audience is going to leave. And that's where we're at now. Really, we're no longer debating is the right crazy. The debate has really shifted in some ways to why doesn't the press report this? And that is a fascinating, because that's where I've always wanted this conversation to go. I've always wanted that to be the subject, because it's much more interesting to me. Why a crazy person is crazy is not interesting to me. Why a putatively sane person keeps insisting that they're not crazy and keeps insisting that a sane person is crazy is very interesting to me, because there's usually a motive behind there. It's either jealousy, greed, basic human motive, but there's something else going on there. And the fact that that keeps happening and the same people keep doing it and they keep getting away with it is starting to be a thing that people talk about. And that to me is a very good thing.
And you know what, Driftglass? No matter what the reason is, it's great news for John McCain.
It always is. It always is. It's always a good day.
Speaking of which.
Hey. Yeah.
Did he ever look older or crazier than he did during the Hillary Clinton testimony on Benghazi? There's no fool like an old fool. As someone called, John Amato posted at Crooks and Liars some of the phone calls that came into C-SPAN after this, and there was a woman on. She phoned in as a Republican, and I think she was a Republican. Sometimes people fake that out, but this woman was so, she seems like kind of a Puma Republican, that she really likes Hillary. And there's something like 35% of Republican women who claim that they will vote for her. So that's awesome. But she was so upset and angry at how John McCain spoke to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And how Rand Paul spoke to Hillary. And she said, there's no fool like an old fool except a young fool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
I mean, I kept waiting for John McCain to sort of ask David Gregory who this uppity young woman was who keeps talking back to him. This is no way to run a TV show, Gregory. Because he really has just lost it. He is nothing but this sack of bile at this point.
Yeah.
And watching her, many other people have said this. This is not new to me or to this podcast, but many other people have pointed out that Hillary, this is this hearing. The reason Hillary Clinton just shredded Republicans in this hearing, really just beat them at every point, either killed them with overwhelming evidence of their stupidity or agreed with them if their point was reasonable and kept trying to lift it up to a much more sober discussion of an after-action report or a failure analysis, something that is broken, let's fix it. And they kept wanting to drag it into the witch hunt territory. They really have gone into that, the thing that killed Mitt Romney during the debates, that please proceed, Senator.
Yeah.
Please proceed, Governor.
Absolutely. They
get their facts from Breitbart.com, and they get their facts from Fox News, and they reiterate that in public as if they're not crazy. Everyone knows there was live film of Benghazi. Everyone knows Barack Obama never called it a terrorist attack. And they harp on it and harp on it and harp on it. And you might remember, Bill Gale, the only thing the Republicans were pissed about in that debate was that Candy Crowley fact-checked Mitt Romney.
Yep.
Not that he was wrong or lying or got his facts from an obviously completely poisonous source, because they all get their facts from the same poisonous source.
Yep.
They were pissed that someone called them on it in public, and you're not allowed to do that according to Karl Rove. So you end up with Hillary Clinton just shredding these people in public. And the reason she's good at it is this is not a hearing about Benghazi. This is Whitewater Chapter 37. She has been putting up with this bullshit, this witch hunting, let's kill the Clintons bullshit from the right since the 90s.
Yep.
And she knows who these people are, and she knows how their mind works, and they're always the same. There's always some secret conspiracy involving Vince Foster and lesbians and cocaine and rapists and murdering, and the Clintons have all these secret contacts and connections, and if we can just get her on the stand. This was their great prayer of putting Newt Gingrich up as their candidate. If we can just get him in front of a microphone, we can break that Kennedy usurper, make him confess to having connections with heirs. And Saul Alinsky really runs him like a predator drone from beyond the grave, and on and on and on. And Hillary Clinton's the same way. If we could just get one of these Clintons on the stand, we could break them. We could show the world that we were right all along. The Clintons are awful people. And she's so good at this now. Yeah. She knows their moves. They're boxing the same. They're throwing the same punches they've been throwing for 30 years. She just steps out of the way and fucking nails them.
Well, and she did this. She did this. Do you know who she had the run in with when she was doing the healthcare stuff for the house, in front of the house? Who it was?
Who was it?
Dick Armey. And they just traded barbs like nobody's business back in the 80s. Yep. You know, she's done this. So it just, yeah, I love that analogy of, you know, this being Whitewater Chapter 37. Like, all right, I know you're going to lie. I know you're going to try to bend it for political. And then you read the comment threads at conservative blogs, if you ever decide to do that.
Yeah, every now and then.
And it really is amazing how they have invested in her some sort of special evil.
Yes.
That allows her to succeed. You know,
yes.
Oh, you know, she rehearsed before she came before the committee, and that's why she defeated us. You mean she was prepared to talk to you?
Questions, and then she answered your questions. And when your questions were obviously witch hunting bullshit, she called you on it.
She called you on it.
And well, this goes back to, I'm sure you've had these exchanges. I know I've had them. Every time you call a Republican on their bullshit in clear and unremitting language, the first line of attack is, oh, typical tolerant liberal. the reason I won't acknowledge you is because you're shrill.
And
it's that, you know, you've got them on the ropes when all they have is, you're not supposed to behave this way. You're supposed to roll over and let me kick you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole argument about Hillary Clinton was she refused to roll over and play liberal. Yes. She refused to roll over and let us beat her because that's what she's there for. And she completely screwed up our programming because our entire thing was we'll torture her for a while and beat her for a while and call her a bad person. Then she'll break down and cry and confess to being Hillary Clinton, lesbian overlord of the left wing communist conspiracy.
And a bitch.
And a bitch. We'll finally have the Clintons in a bag where they belong.
Yeah.
And that's the plan. Yeah. And really, dude, your plan makes Wile E. Coyote look like Stephen Hawking. But you keep running the same stupid plan over and over again, hoping that Barack Obama really is this stooge who can't think without a teleprompter. And at some point, the propaganda you sift out there to as disinformation to keep your dumbass meat stick base happy and angry has backwashed into your leadership cast. The point where you have Mitt Romney saying, you never said this thing that you said. And you realize they have completely run top speed up their own ass.
Yeah. Well, and I did want to say, I now have a special place in my heart for Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. Because, you know, making a simple phone call during a terrorist attack would have satisfied his questions to his satisfaction.
Yes. Exactly. Which is why
Hillary Clinton basically said, bite my butt, you know.
Well, during,
really, we I don't remember, do that. We don't call people while they're being killed to try to make, you know, while they're under attack. We usually don't make phone calls to them. How is everything? Are you okay?
You seriously don't remember George Bush famously being on hold for 4 hours to the World Trade Center on 9/11, waiting, waiting. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Well, we'll just keep trying.
Well, and we'll just keep reading My Pet Goat.
and Dick Durbin, you know, the
senior senator. Who we have mixed feelings about. He's our senator, by the way.
He's our senator, and I am familiar with his work, and I met him a long, 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 long time ago when he was on the rubber chicken circuit first running for office, and a perfectly affable man. Mm-hmm. I bought him coffee once, so I'm kind of proud of that. Or at least it sticks in my memory for some reason. But his rebuttal, he just took the wind right out of the hearings when he just looked at Hillary Clinton and really was looking at the assembled Republican orc army and said, what about five words, Iraqi weapons of mass destruction? Where was all this fucking concern then? We had
getting accurate information.
This body, you know, we had an administration lie from top to bottom about things they swore they knew, that they had investigated carefully, they had absolute ironclad proof of blah, 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 lie us into a war, fuck that war up. And where was all this concern then? Where were those hearings? Where is that asking the Secretary of State to resign? Where's the impeachment of anybody? Where's holding anybody to account?
One of my favorite tweets from the hearing time was, you know, next up, Scooter Libby.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen.
And he'll be pardoned. Don't worry.
Yeah.
He'll spend a little time in the corner and then be pardoned. But that's the pattern. You know, where, or I you could have even talked about weapons to terror, selling weapons to...
I was going to say, Iran-Contra. You know, there's another one.
You can go right
on
down...
On and on and on.
But yep. All of that is trivial compared to the fact that the State Department had no clear idea what was really going on a few hours or days after a chaotic attack halfway around the world. Does that mean there aren't legitimate questions to be asked? Of course not. That's why you have... When I was a project manager, and well, I'm still a project manager, but when I was a more active project manager, I would insist wherever I could, the last 20%, 10 or 20% of your budget and your time should be devoted to looking back on the project.
Yeah.
And memorializing, whatever you want to call it, what happened, and being honest and frank about what worked and what didn't, what failed and what didn't. And when you have a mid-project failure, stop what you're doing, figure out what went wrong and fix it, and put your egos at the door. And people don't like to be wrong. They don't like to be proven wrong. They don't like to have their decisions held up for public scrutiny. But you know what? That's the job of being a public servant. But the degree to which – so I agree there's lots of things to be fixed. But the degree to which everybody knew this was going to be a witch hunt going in, that nobody on the right is fucking interested in the facts of on the ground, and nobody on the right is going to hold them up to the genuine – world-ending catastrophes the Republicans have serially performed, have been guilty of for years and years and years, where there were never any hearings, where there was never any interest.
Well, and no one on either side of the political spectrum had ever genuinely thought about what if Rand Paul was president.
Yeah.
I think that surprised a lot of people.
What?
If I was president of the United States,
Yeah.
But you had, both Ron Johnson and Rand Paul came in on the Tea Party Revolution.
They did. They sure did.
And is there a place? They seem very out of place now that the Tea Party is in such disregard.
Yeah. What Tea Party? The Tea Party originally was a way to say, what Republican Party? We had nothing to do with George Bush. Yeah. And now the remnants of the Tea Party are saying, what are you talking about? We have no idea what you're talking about. The last 2 years never happened. And they really have become the loose political nukes of our system.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
They are dangerous, volatile leftovers from an old regime that are still knocking around the system, still capable of doing enormous damage to the country, and keep getting elected.
Yeah.
Flakes keep getting lobbed into the political process as a way of some constituency somewhere telling the federal government to that they want them shut down.
Yeah. And that's why Chris Matthews said when Ron Johnson opened his mouth, this guy is so far out of his weight class. He really doesn't belong there. But look, he's there for 6 years.
There he is.
And
there he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there he shall be. And there is a certain pleasure to this, because after years of muddling and mixing and blue dogs and, blue dog Democrats and rhinos and which was all, for my money, smoke and mirrors to cover up the real division between this country, which is between conservatives and liberals. Mm-hmm. There has been a great sorting. There has been a great centrifugal process by which you're either pretty much on one side or the other. There's still this bullshit, no-label centrist nonsense that everyone now laughs at, except, you don't never laugh at the guy with the billionaire who's paying the bills. But
Always allowed a place on some panel somewhere. Yeah.
And Mark McKinnon will still have a job no matter what happens.
Well, I thought it was really interesting, though, that after the 2012, right after the 2012 election, he went from being the no labels independent to Republican consultant.
Yes. Yes.
Again.
And Michael Steele keeps, these are like exotic subatomic particles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Slipping in and out of existence. One day, Michael Steele is an MSNBC moderate and a news guy. And the next day, he's a Republican spokesman. And one day he's decrying the fact that his party once upon a time had maybe certain racist inclinations. And the next day he's saying, no such things exist. That's crazy. Liberals are trying to collectivize and communize this country. And that's because he's a paid whore.
Yeah.
And the thing is, at this point in the magic show, it's kind of clear that that's the case. You really have to have been asleep or stupid most of your life not to know what the game is, what the shtick is. You know, that everyone knows how these tricks are performed now. As I said last week, there's no more magic here. So this has now become empty theater for a terribly small sliver of people who have a lot of money, who live on the Upper East Side of New York, who really want to believe that everybody on the right and everybody on the left are equally crazy, and only this few Davos-blessed billionaires in the middle are sane, sensible, practical people. And as long as there's money in it, people keep doing it. But its political efficacy is starting to wane. It's starting to lose its potency because even the no labels goofs have said, we're not a centrist organization anymore. We don't do centrism. You know, they even I give them this. They said, look, we had this belief that there was this big group of people in the middle who were sort of centristy. And we might have got that wrong. So now we just want pragmatists on both sides who are willing to solve, you know, problems. And for both sides, they get John Huntsman, you know, famous political Joe Manchin, who is as right as you can possibly get and still cling to the Democratic Party with your fingernails. So it's not exactly a groundswell of bipartisanship, but it's exactly like, I hate to keep doing this, like Congressman Kofroth from Lincoln. You know, we'll get this one guy who is completely atypical of the party he is in, and we will let him live just so we can say we're bipartisan.
Yep. Yep.
So again, there's this, it's funny now. It's getting to be kind of a stale, tired joke. And again, with a State of the Union address that clearly states a liberal position and a progressive position and says, this is where we're going and this is who we are. And this is what we need. And we're not going to kowtow to crazy people who hold the country hostage anymore. And we're not going to kowtow to the people who enable those people anymore.
Yeah, but I have a worry about that. And that is that as we continue to work toward progress in these areas, that we give in to cynicism and nihilism in terms of the other side. Do you know what I'm saying? That when I came to you yesterday with that Wonkette story about the South Dakota city councilman who had told a reporter that she should be deported to Kenya.
Yeah.
And then people called him out for his racism. And he said, what do you mean? I don't know what color of skin it was. I'm on the phone with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a racist for telling her she should be deported to Kenya.
Yeah. I'm just a moron.
And you did the drift glass shoulder shrug, you know. Yeah, well, you know, now he's famous because Wonkette put him up there, and now, you know, he'll get funding from the Koch brothers or something.
Yeah.
And I don't want what we do to become a shoulder shrug.
Oh, I agree.
And I don't want to be concern troll either, but it worries me. I'm always trying to protect my own mental state. Because I know that if I can't fight the battle with the right armor on, and I don't want to go all biblical here, but if I don't have a clear stand and a clear sense of what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and moving forward with the goals. I mean, that's what was great about the inauguration speech is he really did lay out a clear agenda of equal rights for all. Uh-huh. And equal opportunity for all. And those are the things where we as a people, including me, and I'm on the same level as all of you.
Yep.
We're going to work toward this together.
And he did a call back to Lincoln, to Reagan, to Clinton,
Martin Luther King, too.
It was a brilliantly engineered speech.
Yep.
And extremely well delivered. But continue.
But my point is that if I don't have that, my feet on the ground.
Uh-huh.
If what I'm saying is, oh, well, you know, crazy Republicans, you know. No, these guys are out to destroy the New Deal.
Yes.
They're out to destroy any ability that we have as a people to work together to solve problems.
Yeah.
Because government's evil. Government's wrong. Government can't do anything. When what Barack Obama was saying was government's us. And we can decide that government can be a tool to make a better life for everyone. Then if I don't have that clear in my head and I get pulled away to where, oh, we're crazy Republican, I don't care. You know, I don't care. Whatever they say, whatever. No, I've got to do battle with this.
Yes.
But I want to do it from the standpoint of tolerance and make the world a better place. Those are my goals. Is I will be tolerant of people who are different from me. That doesn't mean I'll be tolerant of lying. I won't be tolerant of greed.
Yes.
You know, though there are things I won't be tolerant of, but I will be tolerant of people who are different from me. And if they're willing to work with me to make the world a better place, we can work together. And it just, it bothers me so much when craziness becomes sort of, well, it's like the woman that wrote us last week who said, you know, before the Professional Left podcast, I would have shrugged my shoulders and said, I can't make any difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I noticed you had in our podcast note, Wayne LaPierre says more stupid things.
Yeah.
And this is not a criticism of you, Driftglass, but it's Wayne LaPierre.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Wayne LaPierre is a moneyed interest.
Yes.
That is fighting against children's safety on the streets of Chicago.
Yes, he is.
And we can't forget that.
No. And
no matter how many stupid things he says, and we just get tired of it, and you can't say it every night on The Daily Show. I get that.
Yeah. Well, I take your point, and your point is a valid one, because it once you become jaded and exhausted and givey uppy.
Yeah, and you need to take a break. I mean, Lent is coming. Yeah. You know, if you need to take a break from the news,
but
do it.
Have you noticed that, since you brought up The Daily Show, have you noticed that Jon Stewart has just kind of given up on the right?
Yeah.
Jon Stewart used to be a centrist.
You know, isn't it interesting that you're right? He is. He's given up on the right, and he's turning to CNN.
Yeah.
Saying, wow, you guys have given up too. Look at that.
He has. I mean, Jon Stewart used to make a good living, and still does make a good living, do a good job of mocking politics. Mm-hmm. Now he mocks Republicans.
And he mocks the media
lot. Well, he does.
More than he used to.
But he's sick of it.
Yeah.
He has had to, you know, when he went on CNN, he went on Crossfire and talked to both participants and said, you're both hurting America. Mm-hmm. You're both
Carlson.
Bad.
Yeah. Tucker Carlson, you're an asshole. He said
that. But he faulted both of them, and rightly so. That's fine. But his whole thing, up to and including his rally for sanity.
Yeah.
Was all about, you know, if only we could get along, and only the crazies on the left and the crazies on the right could just stop being crazy for a while, and all the goodwill people, good people of goodwill in the middle, who all agree that, you know, and we could just let each other, well, you go first, no, you go first, and we'll all be polite and nice to each other. He has very quietly just completely given that up. He has come to the place where we are, which is, no, this is not a symmetrical problem. We have a Republican problem. We have a conservative problem. They're the problem, period. End of sentence. And when you
even after that rally, you know, I did the rally for sanity sign with Orly Tates on it.
Yeah.
And this is why we can't have nice things, is because there is a problem with the right. And it is not a balancing act of let's let the crazy car go first and then we'll have a chance.
Yeah.
You can't. It's not the New Jersey Turnpike. No. It's. You Dude, can't make that analogy.
Blow up the bridge.
They want to blow up. They want to blow up the toll booth. Yeah. So and you're not going to get through.
And so you have. And once you've come to the place where you have to realize that your centrist niceties and rationales don't work anymore. Yeah. You can't keep pretending that it's just if we only both sides this. Once you get to that place, you start looking at the world in a very different way. And I think
you start realizing that Bullshit Mountain actually does exist.
It really does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm not against I'm pro activism. I'm pro girding up with the proper armor. Everything you said is true. But I'm also going to force a bad science fiction analogy. Yes, I am. And when Hal was killing the crew in 2001 using, you know, cutting off their air supply, because he controlled the whole ship. I mean, you know, he was using the entire craft was a weapon. He locked Dave out, no space helmet. He was killing the crew. He was tossing their bodies into the void. Dave could have stood outside the ship or gotten into the ship and just started punching the bulkhead, but he didn't. And Dave could have arm wrestled with the robot arms, but he didn't. Dave went down to the computer core and pulled its brain out.
Yeah.
Then it died.
Yep.
Because that's the problem. So I agree that Karl Rove is a monster. And Sean Hannity is a thug and a greasy fucking.
But we had a really great belly laugh this week because we did turn on Hannity.
We did for 5 seconds.
And Hannity was going on and on about, oh, it's just terrible, this Obama, instead of Obama for America, it's Action for America, or Organized for Action.
Yeah.
Right. And this is just crossing the line between politics and journalism and activism and super PAC and all this mixing together of cats and dogs living together. It's just a terrible, terrible thing for America, John Hannity said.
Carl wrote.
No. And then he said, and now we're going to invite our own Carl Rove on to talk about this.
How awful it is to mix journalism and political advocacy. Isn't that a terrible thing, Carl Rove? Why, yes, it is, Sean Hannity. Word. Those lefty liberals do it all the time, and it's unforgivably awful.
And I agree with your analysis, Sean. Yes.
Ha, ha, ha. They said laughing their way to the bank. Yeah. So there's a thing in Unbreakable, which is also allegedly a science fiction movie, but really isn't. It's a silly movie. It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. But it makes the point. It makes a good comic book point. Samuel Jackson's explaining the laws of comic books to his opponent, to Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And explaining that in every good comic book, there are two villains. There's the villain of the body, the villain who fights you with his physical body. And that's the one you overcome with strength. But behind him, there's always the villain of the mind, the villain of the brain, the one who's pulling the strings, who's making the one. And you can fight orc armies all day long. But until, he said, shifting analogies, but until you get over to Mount Doom and throw the Ring of Power in, you're screwed because they're just going to keep coming. The thing that I'm always looking for is the weak point in the opposition. The weak point in the opposition, because you and I only have a certain amount of energy and time and passion to spend on anything. Everyone only has a limited amount. So where do you spend that? Well, my contention is always and has always been, if you expend it fighting the orc army, toe to toe, if you spend it in conservative comment threads arguing with every idiot who thinks Barack Obama was born in Kenya, you're going to exhaust yourself for no good reason. That the reason the right has been able to hang together is because they have enablers in the media. And the enablers in the media are the ones who keep insisting no matter what the right does, the left is equally bad. And as long as that lie is allowed to go unchallenged, no matter what you say about the right, it just reflects right back to you. Whatever you come up with, whatever your indictment is, however magically, whatever words you come up with that can absolutely destroy an opponent using the weirding method. Now I've gone over to Dune. So
yeah. Everybody's drunk by now.
Whatever weirding way you come up with of indicting the right for its latest atrocity, everyone over there will simply say, yeah, but liberals are just as bad.
Yeah.
And
deaf
ears. And the reason they get away with that is because a guy named David Gregory and a guy named David Brooks and a guy named Tom Friedman and a woman named Jennifer Rubin and on and on and on and on and on and on, and on in the media keep insisting that this is true. And they will not permit anyone onto the stage who challenges it. That's why Barack Obama's appearance on Meet the Press was a direct threat to that hegemony.
Yep.
That's why his speech was a direct threat. That's why the media freaked out over it. Because it's in those two appearances, he said, and his people said, no, this is not a symmetrical situation. The right is wrong, and we need to acknowledge that or we'll never get anywhere. And that conversation, I feel vindicated. I feel excited by it. I hope we have it in time, because there's a lot of things that we need to fix in a pretty big hurry. But until we have that conversation, until they are moved aside and people of goodwill are actually allowed to have reasonable conversations without the Kenyan usurper crowd jumping up and down and screaming about death panels, we're never getting anything done. So that's why I focus my energy where I do. I might be wrong. History might prove me wrong. But that's why I do what I do.
Very good.
Thank you.
I just want to talk about abortion for a minute. There's a couple stories out there that are just kind of flooring me this week.
May I say that nobody talks about abortion for a minute? So,
a woman who was 7 months pregnant with twins had a heart attack and was brought into the ER by an ambulance. And they did not perform a C-section on the twins, and the woman died, and the twins died. And this was in a Catholic hospital. Mm-hmm. And the Catholic hospital's lawyers are arguing, ha ha ha, because they're being sued for wrongful death.
Yep.
That the court should not overturn the longstanding rule in Colorado that the term person encompasses only individuals born alive.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's a little bit of hypocrisy going on there.
You went and got money involved, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, the Catholic Church has decided that the unborn aren't people if you're going to sue us over it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what this is about. So there's that. And then I know a lot of people have heard about this one, but this New Mexico legislator, Catherine Brown, with an R after her name, people.
Yeah.
Thinks that women who abort their rape babies are destroying evidence and should go to prison. So there's that.
Yeah. I'm not in another location shrugging my shoulders.
No.
I'm in another location. Just I'm not surprised.
No, we're not surprised. And you got to bring up the rapey rape thing again because, you know.
Because Jesus.
Yeah. So don't abort your rape baby because it's evidence.
Yeah.
Your whole body is evidence. Yeah. Uh-huh. We know that.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think you've talked about this before. I think it would be good to do a 60-minute style interview with a man in silhouette who's the rapist thanking the Republican Party for protecting his rights as a father.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what this is about. This is protecting the rapist's rights. And some states do. Mm-hmm. Some states give visitation rights to rapists. There was a wonderful picture on Tumblr this week. Somebody had it was obviously either young college or senior high school sociology class, and the teacher's attempt to sort of teach about rape in a way that they obviously thought was progressive, and the question on the study guide or test or whatever it was name three ways that a woman can prevent date rape. And the student wrote just across this blank space that had 1, 2, 3 down the list, said the date should not rape the woman. That's how.
I suppose that's crazy. Just crazy.
Raped,
that's just crazy enough to work, Blue Gal.
Women should not rape men either.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the point.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's under the hood, the absolute belief in a white, male, conservative, Christian hegemony.
Yep.
The belief that God intends that group of people to rule over this country because this country is the new Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And that whatever means they have to use to enforce their will is sanctioned by God. You can find it in Alexander Stevens saying that in the Cornerstone speech. You can find that in Loving versus Virginia. You can find that in Pat Buchanan's Subconscious. You can find that in everything Jerry Falwell ever said, everything that the Westboro Baptist Church believes, and everything Wayne LaPierre believes.
Yep.
This constant obsessive terror that someone, the federal government, the Zionist occupying secret conspiracy that's using the Kenyan, et cetera, is going to come and take their freedom away and give it to some black people under reparations and welfare. That existential terror is never going to leave the Republican heart and the conservative heart until they die.
And the point that we've made before that I think is really important as we're analyzing this, that it's not racism. It's white supremacy. It's white male supremacy that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's the enemy here. People will, you know, I have good friends who are African-American. I have coworkers that are women. I get along with them just fine.
Uh-huh.
But underneath that is a belief that it is a woman's responsibility to prevent rape. And it's a woman's responsibility to have her rapist baby if God decides that she should get pregnant. Although if it was a real rape, her body would have shut that whole thing down if it was a legitimate rape. So all of the presumptions behind those statements are of male supremacy.
Sure.
And that's supremacy of the sperm.
It's not to
dominate women's bodies.
In a weird way, it's not hostile. It is simply they're stating in the most honest way they can what they believe to be the proper default setting for the universe.
Which is we're in charge.
And anything that screws with that default setting is an offense to God.
Yep.
Barack Obama is an offense to my white God.
Yeah.
Having a Democrat in the White House is an offense to my conservative God.
Yeah.
And having chicks doing things that guys should do and black people being treated as my equal is so offensive to every good or sense of good order and discipline of the universe that I can't stand it. And I will vote for.
And don't get me started about the gays.
The gays, well, they ruin everything, don't they? Granted, they make good clerks and they help out a lot in Congress and they get a lot of shit done behind the scenes, but we can't really have them out there in the public now, can we?
Every Republican has one in their on their staff, you know.
And that but that goes right along with it too. It's perfectly acceptable to have these people around as pets.
Yeah. See, that's the same thing. Yeah, it is. It is.
Fine. They're well behaved. They're well groomed. They do what they're told. They kind of sometimes they mouth off a little bit and you slap them around and then they go back to what they're doing. That's kind of funny. They're kind of like court jesters, but you can't take them seriously. You can't let them have real power.
Yeah.
Or else my position as the dominant force in the universe is upended. And since my entire identity is locked up in my sense of domination over this planet under God's mantle, you're fucking with my deepest sense of personal identity. And when that happens, people really do flip out.
Yeah.
And they really do go nuts. And that's what we're seeing happening all around us is conservatism as a sense of conservation.
Yeah.
We must keep the country the way it was in 1770.
Except when it comes to global warming.
Yeah.
In that case, we should just roll over it with a coal-fired steam engine.
Yeah,
because we are dominating this whole planet. Yeah, we have to stop there.
Yes, we do.
Every week we post to our website and Facebook page an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Caruso. Caruso is at least part Maine Coon.
Yeah.
He's got red hair, and he's definitely the alpha cat. He weighs in at over 20 pounds.
Uh-huh.
So, Chris Christie, eat your heart out.
I love Maine Coons. They're very, very smart. They're silky as hell. And when I accidentally got one as a kitten once and was looking up how to attend to it, it talked about how to administer medication for 10-pound intervals of their weight. Like, wait a minute. What? How big is this thing going to get? And it was like, I don't know. You know. But I have a special place in my heart for all cats, but Maine Coons especially are very smart.
Yeah. And this one is an orange. It's part Maine Coon and obviously part orange tabby. So
yeah.
Beautiful kitty. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at our email address or our U.S. Postal Service address, go U.S. Postal Service Union, we reserve the right to read your letter on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties think the worst tragedy since 9/11 is Rand Paul's Jerry Curl.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.